Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
My tone of voice makes it sound like I'm bringing you breaking tragic news, but it's just me. But isn't that sad? Does it drive you absolutely batty when your husband in your own house gets sick? That's got to feel like a huge dereliction of duty.
Oh, right, because in your backyard. I allowed it.
You allowed illness in your home, in your backyard.
Do you think that doctors have the ability to prevent all illness, and we're just withholding it from you if we do not do so?
No, dear heart, that's what makes it a joke and not a real thing that I say to you. That is the difference there.
But you have
nailed it though. That is 100%.
If I could prevent illness for you, I certainly would.
Oh,
because. Well, why I do love you.
And the whining.
You're so whiny.
Yeah,
it really stops everything, you know?
Yeah.
Like, time stops.
Yeah, but you know what, Sid? I asked you to look in the otoscope with the otoscope in my ear 3 days ago, and you didn't, and I didn't bring it back up again until this exact moment.
No, I did look in your ear.
No, you didn't.
And I told you that there was wax in there,
so
and it was blocking the eardrum,
yeah.
And we were going to have to flush it out.
You never did any of that, though, did you? Squeaky wheel gets the grease, it seems.
We've been a little busy.
Yeah, but it seems like if I'd been a bit more of a squeaky wheel, I'd have perfect hearing, other than the hearing loss that I have, other than that.
Did you put the drops in your ear like I told you to soften the wax so I could flush it out?
Did you do the podcast? That's not my job. Your job is doctor. My job is podcast. If podcasting could heal you, I would every day.
Listen.
I would privately podcast to heal you.
Lately, our job has been community theater.
Job has been community theater and barely parents. That's what our two.
Parenting. Our kids are out of school. We are directing one show, we are in another show, our kids are in a third show.
And we're building...
We're building the set, we're painting the set, we're helping collect props, we're helping...
I don't mean
everything.
That in the community theater everything. Sense we're building set. I mean, Sydney and I are literally every day for hours a day to build the sets on our own.
I received power
Almost.
Tools
Not quite.
For Mother's Day.
Yeah.
That was my present.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and a very cool medical kit.
Both sides of
emergency
you,
medical
the craftsman, the doctor, both
yeah, the,
sides.
The craftsman, that's a side of me. Anyway, so I say all that as a way of also saying I'm sorry we've been absent.
Yeah, here we are though.
Yes, we're back.
We're back.
We're
and you have
mostly
a,
better.
A bucket of questions waiting for us that I'm going to pose to Sydney.
I do. But now before I have a fun story from my dad. This doesn't involve someone dying.
Oh, good. For a change, yeah.
I know. It's exciting. Whenever my dad starts a story, I think this is a lot of dads. This is a very dadly thing that dads want to tell you, like, hey, do you remember that person? And then they're going to tell you about how they died.
How they died, 100%. Did you go to school with? No, they died.
Mm-hmm.
Or they went to prison.
Yeah. It's one of those things.
One of those two.
But this is not about that. But he told me the story, and I thought, this is a cool story for our show, but I don't think it's a whole episode. I just think it's an interesting story, and I thought this would fit well into a medical questions episode.
Well, regale me, I guess.
Justin.
Yeah.
Did you know that the Beatles are responsible for the CT scanner?
No, honey, I didn't
This
know
is
that.
How my dad started the story.
Well, I mean, can I say, though, credit to your dad, that's the best way to start the story, I bet. I mean, it's very hooky.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure he heard this on maybe another podcast or Reddit. He gets, frequently will get him like those trivia calendars.
That reminds me of when Doc came up to me and she said, did you know that narwhals are not the unicorns of the sea? I had to be like, Dang. Okay. Tell me more. Okay. You got me, kid. I'm hooked.
Okay. So, you know, EMI, Electrical and Musical Industries.
Yes.
Which was the Beatles record label.
Yes.
Okay. So, back in the 1950s, there's a researcher, Godfrey Hounsfield, there. Mm-hmm. Okay. It used to be an industrial research company mm-hmm. back when Godfrey was working there.
Okay.
He did a bunch of work on computers. He helped build the first all-transistor computer, which I don't know anything about computers, but I guess that's a big deal.
Has to be.
Must be. But all of that was not profitable back in the 50s because we didn't love computers yet, I guess.
Mm-hmm. We weren't into them.
We weren't into them.
They were so heavy that they could fall and crush us, and that's right. Less of a problem now. Some of them definitely still could, but back then, all of them could.
They took up whole buildings, and now we wear them on our wrists.
Like, we tolerate
keep them in our pockets.
Like, we tolerate fridges, but we don't, like, try to make them part of our lives. Like, we don't, you know what I mean? Like, we don't get bunches of fridges for every room or try to make laptop fridges or any of that because they're too big, and we don't like things that can fall on us and kill us.
I do wish I had a laptop fridge, though, or one that I carried with me.
Right.
That but would be
you
convenient
don't feel
for
anything.
Snacking.
You buy your fridge, you never think about it again because it's so big it could fall and kill you. People don't like that kind of thing.
Listen, I might disagree with you because I really love fridge water. And so, like, our fridge is important to me because it supplies me with fridge water, which is the best water. Love fridge water.
Yeah.
Anyway, so.
Even though our maniacal kids keep changing it to crushed ice. Who enjoys crushed ice?
Oh, you are going to bring out all the crushed ice fans with that one.
I'm not talking about the good ice, and I'm not talking. I'm talking about crushed ice. It's like, boy, this drink's good. I wish it could be wetter in 5 minutes. Perfect. Wetter and colder. That's what this needs.
Let me finish this story so you can ask me questions. Okay. So it wasn't profitable. The company sold its computer wing in 1962. And then in 1962, it also did something else. EMI signed the Beatles.
Oh, that's funny.
Because they were also, like I said, a record label. At that time, Godfrey was still so well respected at EMI that they were letting him just do his independent research there, which is kind of like, I always wonder, eventually he would be funded by the Beatles' profits. Like, right. That's how he would keep going.
Yeah.
But initially, you got to wonder if they weren't like, you don't work here anymore. You can work here, but you don't work here, but you can. But you don't, so we're not going to pay you, but you can.
It's like Milton from Office Space. Yeah, we corrected the error. I got to respect a business that's like, what's your model? Okay, well, let me tell you. We got four British guys that play music. We got them from a bunch of Liverpool bars. Okay, what else? We have an old man trying to make an incredible new scanner. So both, yes. Which one will pan out? We don't know. So we just do both of these at once.
But turns out...
Both. That's a great business. Good job, guys.
Good job. You picked
That's
two
wild.
Things
you
unrelated.
Two things. Slam dunk.
So the Beatles funded his research, obviously.
Yeah.
He went on to invent the CT scanner. And EMI released it in 1972. And he got the Nobel Prize for Medicine in 1979.
Mm-hmm.
And it was thanks to the Beatles' profits that he was able to continue this research and create the CT scanner.
Amazing.
So there you go.
Amazing. Do you feel good that you didn't have to try to stretch that into a full 30-minute episode?
Yes.
I can see. There would have been a lot of winding anecdotes.
But it's a fun and it fits into Sawbones. And I thought this, you know, spicy anecdotes.
Do you think there was
spicy,
ever a time?
Exciting, interesting anecdotes.
Do you think there was ever a time where they were like, hello, doctor. What are you working on in here? Isn't that incredible, John? Yes, it is, Paul.
And maybe they contributed, and then maybe he showed up, and he was like, hey, I had some lyrics that I thought.
Yeah. Here, guys, I call this LSD. Let me know what you think. I invented it.
I made it.
I made this.
I don't think he was that kind of scientist.
Maybe in the 60s.
But maybe Godfrey, listen.
Was that kind of scientist.
I don't know Godfrey. Maybe he was.
You weren't there.
Read me our first question.
Hello from Australia. I have thrombophilia.
Hey, good.
And that's good?
No, that was a good pronunciation. It's not, I'm not saying good, you have
okay,
thrombophilia.
But you
I'm
can
saying,
understand out of context,
yes.
It was a wild thing
Sorry,
for you to say,
I
right?
meant, well, I could see you trying to pronounce
You're
it,
welcome.
And you did a good job
with
it.
As your PR agent, I just want to clarify that Dr. Smurl meant good on my pronunciation.
Yes.
And for that and other health reasons, I'm not allowed to donate blood, but I've always wondered, what would happen if I donated blood to someone with hemophilia? Would they cancel each other out, fight, strongest blood wins? During COVID, we had a blood shortage. I called to see if I could donate and asked this question. And the answer he gave was, I don't get paid enough for this, which is a kind of a weird thing for somebody in a position of begging for human blood to get. Like, it's a bit saucy. Like, okay, I'll keep all 9 pints then. Fine. Be that way. Thank you for the wonderful show. Best wishes.
Ellen.
Well,
I mean, when one of our listeners includes their name, I assume they want us to.
Okay. Well, Ellen, there's a question.
So specifically, Ellen mentioned Factor 5 Leiden as the thrombophilia. There are different. So I think we're kind of familiar with the concept of hemophilia. We've done a whole episode on it. And most people have heard about it, I think, because of the royal families.
Right.
Historically, all the royals who had hemophilia, and then maybe at some point in a genetics class or a biology class or some sort of science class in your life, they've shown you like a big family tree of all the royal families of Europe and how hemophilia was passed among them. Have you ever seen that?
I have not.
No. I have been shown that in so many science classes, I couldn't tell you, and med school classes. Anyway.
Hey, Sid, do you guys ever talk about the fact that Factor 5 Leiden sounds a lot like the name of a mid-80s Japanese anime? If someone told you, because the L and the R sounded the same in Japanese, right?
Yeah.
If I could see the logo of Factor 5 Leiden, like, in my head, it sounds awesome, right? It could be right there with Captain Harlock and all the other classics.
It could, but it's not awesome, I think, because what Factor 5 Leiden is, it's a clotting disorder that means the protein that stops the clotting process. Mm-hmm. So, like, your blood is clotting because you're cut. Something's bleeding, right? So your blood starts the clotting cascade, is what we call it. That's good. We want it to start clotting so that you don't just keep bleeding. Good. This is all good. But the protein that stops it, APC, doesn't work right.
Okay.
It doesn't. It's not that it doesn't work at all, but it doesn't work right.
Okay.
And so APC is supposed to stop Factor 5, so it keeps going when you have this mutation, so you keep clotting, so you can have clots. This is the opposite. If you think of hemophilia as you can't clot, loosely, you just keep bleeding. And there are different kinds of hemophilia, and there are different kinds of clotting disorders where that make you clot.
So this is kind of
like
the old...
there's a bunch of factors involved in clotting and stopping clotting.
It's like the old, what would happen if you put a humidifier and a dehumidifier next to
this is exactly, yes. So if somebody with hemophilia who can't clot their blood or has difficulty, I shouldn't say can't, has difficulty clotting their blood, receives blood from someone whose blood clots too easily, what happens? So I had to, this was an interesting thought exercise, and I went through this whole thought exercise before I got to sort of the denouement, but I'm going to save that because this is how I researched this. Cause I was sitting there thinking through the different kinds of hemophilia, and I had to remind myself of all the clotting cascade cause I haven't studied that in a while.
Yeah.
So hemophilia is different kinds of bleeding disorders. Some affect factor 8, some 9, some 10. So there's different kinds. Okay. You need 8, 9, and 10 in the clotting pathway to do their thing before you ever get to 5. And once you get to 5, if you have factor 5 Leiden, you can't stop it. Like 5, the thing that's supposed to cut 5 off and you don't keep clotting isn't there. So you don't stop it. So I don't think it would cancel each other out because even though with hemophilia you have less of 8, 9, or 10, you still have some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would still move through the clotting pathway to an extent. And once you get to 5, if you now have factor 5 Leiden, it's not going to stop. So you're going to have a clot.
Right.
So it would be less of the initial factors. But once you get to that other factor and once that card has fallen, the dominoes will keep falling.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. However, the recipient does not have factor 5 Leiden.
Right.
So they would have some of the protein that they need to stop factor 5. So maybe they could stop it.
Okay.
So maybe it would be fine.
So it might be fine.
So this is what I got to is I actually think it might be fine. And then I thought, okay, all of this only matters if you're donating plasma, which has the clotting factors in it.
Right.
Okay.
Because otherwise it's stripped from it.
If you're just donating what we call packed red blood cells, meaning we've stripped all of that out of there and they're
Power red, they call it.
Power red.
So gross.
If you're just donating power red and not all the other stuff.
Gatorade, it's my blood.
I don't think it would matter at all with that. I mean, other than the fact that like donating blood, if you have a bleeding or clotting disorder, there is some, it might be low depending on what the disorder is, but there could be some risk to the act of donating blood, right?
Right.
Other than that, I thought, well, red blood cells should be just fine. It seems weird. There's a restriction. So then I went to the Red Cross page and found that people with Factor V Leiden can indeed donate packed red blood cells as long as they're not on an anticoagulation, as long as you don't have a clot and you're having to take a blood thinner for it. You can't donate plasma, but you can donate packed red blood cells. So this is where I got to. I thought, well, they should be able to. And then I found out that other smarter people than me already knew that. So maybe it's just a U.S. versus Australia thing. But here in the U.S., you can indeed donate packed red blood cells if you have Factor V Leiden.
Wild. Okay.
So there you go. This was the end of this very long thought exercise that I went through as I had diagrams of clotting cascades up on my computer and I was working through them.
The answer was on
the answer website. Was on the Red Cross page.
Why is blood sticky? Speaking of blood, that's from Julie.
Okay. So I had to think about, is blood sticky? Do you think about blood being sticky? I've had blood on me many times.
I would say more viscous.
Yeah. Which is, I think we're saying the same thing.
Yeah.
We're using different words.
It's probably
for the
like
same.
More sticky, obviously, as the coagulation starts, right? As it starts to turn into a.
Exactly.
Scab or whatever.
Exactly. So initially when someone starts bleeding, the blood is not particularly sticky. As the clotting factors that we just discussed start doing their thing, the blood intentionally becomes, it's sticking together so that it stops. So like that's not a flaw. That's the design.
Right.
There are things that can make blood stickier. If you have higher red blood cells, there are some conditions you can have that automatically you have more red blood cells. There's some medications that can increase your red blood cells. Classically, smoking. If you are a smoker, you may have a higher red blood cell count. That can make your blood more viscous or stickier, more clotting factors. So if the blood is clotting, it's going to get stickier. Higher lipids, if you have really high. I have seen blood that actually looks like you can see the fat in it. You can see like the cholesterol in it, like the white, creamy. That's going to be
I'm surprised they never used that blood and cigarettes thing on a detective show we've watched, or like House or something. Like, the blood's pretty sticky. I guess we've got a smoker. That would be amazing. That would be an amazing pull. Hey, Sid.
Uh-huh.
I'm a rower, so I get blisters. That's the untruest thing I've ever said. That is the furthest life experience from my own.
Yeah, you are not.
I am not.
No, you are not.
I am a rower, so I get blisters on my hands. It's a normal part of rowing, and dealing with it is part of the sport, but I've always wondered why my blisters itch while they're healing. So why does skin itch when it grows back? That's from Janice.
This is, you know, I started thinking about this, Janice. Is this really, because everybody always says, like, it's itching, that means it's healing. Mm. Have you heard that?
Yeah, I hear
that constantly, like, because I do a lot of wound care in my day-to-day job now. And so people will say, like, I think it's getting better. It's itching.
That feels like a Middle Ages sort of like imagining the little guys going down there to fight it. You know what I mean? Like, well, your humors are flooding down there, so it's itching you.
There have been studies looking into, is this a real thing or is this sort of like a folksy medicine kind of belief? It is a real sensation. It is definitely something that people, not all, but it is generally experienced by many, many people, the sensation of itchiness when something is healing. And it probably is because tissues are healing. So there is evidence that itchiness is a sign something is healing. Now, that doesn't always mean that because it's itchy, it's healing. Obviously, there are lots of other reasons that we itch. But they've looked into this to see.
Biologically, that is strange to me, right? Because the opening a blister, it introduces infection, right? And it's weird to me biologically that we have developed the urge to scratch at or itch blisters and things like that, where it's going to expose it to more infection. It feels like kind of a bug.
It is from an evolutionary perspective, it is not helpful. It is not advantageous. I mean, I don't think it's a function as much as a dysfunction. So the thoughts, they've tried to look at like why would you experience this? Some of it is like histamine release. When things are healing, histamine is still part of that process. And one of the things histamine does is make you itchy. Also, collagen formation, just as the tissues are reforming, like scar tissue and all that, it is you like the sensation, the stimulation of that, your brain may interpret as itchiness. The other thing is just crossed pathways. Those nerves that are in that superficial skin, as the skin is healing, are being stimulated. Mm-hmm. And so you're kind of getting that nerves can do this where they kind of miss. It's not misfiring. As they're firing, we are feeling it and we don't know what it is.
Right.
And that is not uncommon for us to interpret, I don't know what this is, as itchy.
Sure. Yeah.
That is sense. A very common.
Well, because part of it might be to get something off of you, right? Like you've got yes. a bug on you. You don't recognize the feeling of that bug, or it could be poisonous or whatever. So
I think it's. That's exactly true. No, and I think instead of it, think about it this way. So if we feel something crawling on us, we might experience the sensation of itchiness.
Right.
Or it could be like formication, which is ants crawling in your skin.
Tell me more.
Formication. But like you experience the sensation of itchiness so that you scratch at it and get the bug off of you. Obviously, you don't want to do that when something's healing. You shouldn't. Please don't scratch it. Leave it alone. But it's similar to like pain, right? Pain is functional. If something hurts, that's your body's way of saying, stop doing that thing. You could damage yourself. That is, so pain has a function. There's mm-hmm. a reason we experience pain. But then when you look at like chronic pain, it has lost its function. Mm-hmm. We don't need, like, chronic pain is not necessarily telling you something's wrong. So now we've entered into something that is functional that has become a dysfunction. I think it's the same thing. Itchiness has a function. And right. now this is a dysfunction of itchiness.
Okay, that makes sense.
I have more questions for you, Justin.
Oh.
But before we get there,
yeah,
we must go to the billing department.
Let's go. The medicines that escalate macabre for the
mouth. You've probably heard about HelloFresh in the past. It's a huge meal kit in America. I mean, the number one meal kit in America. But this fall, they're serving up even more love. Folks, this isn't the HelloFresh you remember. It's new. HelloFresh has doubled its menu. Now you can choose from 100 options each week, including new seasonal dishes and recipes from around the world. You can also, if you're into veggies, you can eat greener with some new veggie-packed recipes that have two or more veggies per dish. I gotta say, folks, that's ambitious for me. I think a two-veggie meal, I'd be feeling pretty darn good about myself. I really like this new offering from HelloFresh. All these options, you are definitely going to find some stuff that you love. The best way to cook just got better. Go to HelloFresh.com/Sawbones10FM to get 10 free meals plus a free breakfast for life. One per box with active subscription. Free meals applied as discount on first box. New subscribers only, varies by plan. That's HelloFresh.com/Sawbones10FM to get 10 free meals plus free breakfast for life. I think staying connected is really one of the best gifts that you can give during this holiday season. And I think Aura Frames is a really good way of doing that. Here's what you do. It's a digital photo frame. You set it up for the intended recipient, or they can set it up themselves, you know, if they're a little bit more tech savvy. But once that's done, you are able to send pictures onto that photo frame from anywhere wirelessly through the Aura app. So imagine this. You set it up for grandma, and then you capture a picture of the kids at the zoo. Maybe there's 5 dolphins. You're like, holy crap, grandma loves dolphins. She's going to love this picture. Well, she could be seeing it just by uploading it directly to her frame. Even if grandma's already got one, what if she needs a second one in the toilet? Or it doesn't have to be in there. It could be anywhere. But imagine that. You beautiful designs from Aura range from like, I just saw the new Carver mat it's new to me. I got a new Carver mat frame. It's really beautiful. I like all the designs and I think you will too. Not just for you though, maybe it's a gift, but you know what? Grab one for yourself. You're going to be jealous. For a limited time, save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $35 off Aura's best-selling Carver mat frames named number one by Wirecutter by using promo code Sawbones at checkout. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code Sawbones. This deal is exclusive to listeners and frames sell out fast, so order yours now to get it in time for the holidays. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Sequoia Holmes, pop culturist and host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast. Contrary to the title, it is not a podcast about the band Paramore. Each episode, I, along with a special guest co-host, dissect one pop culture topic that mainstream media doesn't associate with Black people, but we know that we like. Tune in every Thursday to the podcast that's dedicated to helping Black people feel more seen here on Maximum Fun.
I'm Yucky Jessica.
I'm Chuck Crudsworth.
And this is Terrible,
a podcast where we talk about things we hate that are awful.
Today we're discussing Wonderful, a podcast on the Maximum Fun Network.
Hosts Rachel and Griffin McElroy, a real-life married couple.
Yuck!
Discuss a wide range of topics. Music, video games, poetry, snacks.
But I hate all that stuff.
I know you do, Yucky Jessica.
It comes out every Wednesday, the worst day of the week, wherever you download your podcasts.
For our next topic, we're talking Fiona, the baby hippo from the Cincinnati Zoo.
I hate this little hippo.
Sid, how do the doctors know my blood type? Do they also have a document or sample of my DNA? Did they take a little sample when I was a baby? Do they know how Italian I am? That's something I say when I walk into rooms a lot. Like, do you all know how Italian I am?
Not at all,
not
right?
Not very much
like,
at all, Justin.
I think you're like 0%.
You're probably 0% according to, I don't know, I've never done one of those, but if I did one.
You did do one.
Did I?
Yeah. We did one for an episode.
Oh, right. No that, Italian that I recall. Is my DNA protected by HIPAA? How do we make sure we don't do eugenics? This question's all over the place, Danny. I gotta be honest with you. How does blood work relate to this? What if I have an affliction that's passed on genetically? Can they test it without reading my DNA? So mostly I want to know how Italian I am. Love the show, you all. Pumpkins and penguins, Daniel.
So I thought this question, Daniel, you do go all over the place here. But I thought this was a good thing to address. I don't necessarily know your blood type. This like, is commonly...
Okay, can you... This is going to sound weird, but can you clarify some of the pronouns in that sentence? Like, I don't know exactly if you mean the broad doctors.
As a doctor, if you are my patient, and this happens not infrequently, so you're not alone, Daniel. I will have a patient come in, and they'll be talking to me about whatever they're there to see me for, you know, blood pressure or whatever. And in the course of the conversation, they'll say, hey, by the way, can you tell me what my blood type is? And I think there is an assumption that somewhere in our medical record, somewhere in your history, I have your blood type recorded. I don't. Very often, I don't.
It's not the case.
There now, when you were born, it is likely.
If you were born. I don't know what that means.
It is quite possible or likely, depending on the situation, that your blood type was recorded. That is quite possible. Quite likely, in fact. However, I don't necessarily have access to those records. And often, if you're an adult, I definitely do not have access to those records. I don't know where they are. We're kind of still in that point in this country where they might be on paper somewhere. They might be scanned into some computer somewhere. But trying to find those records could be almost impossible.
I want to see if they got in the Red Cross app. I feel like I've seen it there
now,
before.
The Red Cross might know your blood type because they type it when they take it. I can find out your blood type by ordering a blood type.
That sounds like a threat.
So if you really want to know, your doctor can give you an order. You take it to the lab. They draw your blood. They tell you your blood type. But generally speaking, your primary care doctor may well not know your blood type. And if you don't either, it's a good thing to know. It's a good thing to find out. They can test you for it. I don't know, insurance payment and all that. You'd have to work that out. Because without needing a transfusion, it's ridiculous, but I can see insurance companies saying, well, why do you need to know your blood type?
I can't keep mine in my head. I know your blood type. I don't know my blood type.
That makes me feel bad because now you're going to say, what's mine? And I don't know. Mine is A+, but yeah. That's because that's what
I know.
That's what I like to get.
Yeah, I know. But I have the same blood type. We're both A+.
We're both A+.
That's bad, right? Or is that good?
No. I mean, we can give each other blood.
Do you want some?
No, I'm good. I mean, I think I'm good. Okay. I haven't had labs done in a while. Anyway, and so we definitely don't have your DNA necessarily. There's no reason we would have that information. You can do things like the online genetic testing that you send away for. I'm not going to plug any of the companies. We've done an episode on this before. You can do things where you will give a company your DNA.
Yes.
And then they will have it. And then you've just got to trust whatever they're going to do with it. When we did, now I know our DNA is stored in a lab in Indiana.
That's right.
Because you and I were part of the COVID vaccine trial.
All right.
Part of it is that we signed a form that said we're going to take your DNA.
Eli Lilly, do they?
Mm-hmm. Oh, they have our DNA in a lab in Indiana for the next 15 years. So there you go. So you can choose to get your DNA profile checked through these various companies, but generally that's not something your doctor's just going to do. Now, if you have to visit a geneticist, if they're working you up for specific genetic disorders, there are specialized circumstances where they might look for certain genes or do some kind of DNA profile. But generally speaking, your family doctor does not know your blood type or does not know anything about your DNA unless you have pursued those things.
Hey, you know, this is like our third question about blood, so I wanted to take the opportunity to say that just to remind you, there's always a huge need for blood. If you've never donated before, it's not as scary as it seems. You get free snacks afterwards. A lot of times they have t-shirts. One time I got a Shark Week t-shirt just from giving blood, which seems like I was robbing them at that point, because I'll just make more of the crap and they're giving away Shark Week t-shirts. Thanks, suckers. It takes like an hour. It doesn't hurt too bad. And you know, if you can get in there, it's a really— the app makes it really cool now, because you can watch your blood. If you're like, micro goal oriented like myself, I can watch my blood go to Indiana or whatever, wherever it's going, and see how they've used it and stuff. So it's very gratifying if you get a chance. Another question, Sydney, you got it. I am an identical twin, and I've always wondered if I gave my sister a kidney/liver/bone/marrow, etc., would she still need to take rejection medication? Is the likelihood of rejection different if we were newborns, i.e. before other external factors come into play? Can I guess?
That's from the spare twin.
I would guess, I don't know. There is a part of me that feels like it would probably be okay, but there is also a part of me where I feel like it might fall into the uncanny valley, where the body's like, okay, that is exactly like Janice. Except that's definitely not— Janice is what they call the liver. That's definitely not Janice, but it looks exactly like— you are going to think I'm crazy, Paul. That's the kidney.
Yeah.
Don't look at me that way.
Okay. So I had to check this out, because in my head— and this is, okay, this is very important in medicine. Just because something makes sense logically doesn't mean it's true. There are lots of things about the human body that don't make sense.
I would think at birth it would probably be fine, but I don't know if like genetic mutations over your lifetime would be enough of a, you know?
So likely you would not need anti-rejection medications. Huh. There are a number of identical twin transplants that have been done and studied that do not take anti-rejection medications and are just fine. So this is actually kind of a changing area of medicine. I found studies as recent as the last couple years where they've looked at the number of identical twin transplants that are taking anti-rejection meds and ones that aren't. And what they found is about half of the sample they looked at were taking them, but they didn't necessarily know that they needed them. Mm-hmm. So I think it's this area where probably they've done a transplant, they automatically put these patients on anti-rejection meds because that's what we do. And then the risk of taking them away is so high. It's a tough thing to study, right? Yeah. Because if you take them away and then they reject the organ, that's devastating. I mean, yes, that could be fatal.
Yes.
So how do you know? But definitely we have people who have gotten a transplant from an identical twin who are not on anti-rejection meds. So we know it is possible.
Wild.
So yes, I know. I mean, because genetically it's the same thing. It is the exact same organ that you have implanted. They're just doubles of the same organ. So, and they used to, by the way, before we could do DNA to look for perfect matches, do you know how they used to test to see if, like, because they used to do transplants between identical twins, mm-hmm, assuming that they matched, mm-hmm, but the way they would double check it is they would take a piece of skin from the person who was donating, mm-hmm, and attach it to the person who would receive the organ and see if the skin got rejected.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that wild?
That's wild, yeah.
And if the skin wasn't rejected, they would transplant the organ. But now we can check DNA. We don't do that now.
Hey, Sid. Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
And it's a little bit personal.
Okay.
What would you do if a patient brought their own speculum to an exam? Why are they selling them?
So
that's from Heather, and you need the context.
Heather sent me a link to Nella. Scoot down with confidence, they say. No, I'm not going to give you my email address, Nella. Anyway, Nella is, they sell the Nella Comfort Kit, which is a speculum kit for those of you who have vaginas and require speculum exams. The Nella Comfort Kit gives you your own speculum to bring along with you, along with what's in there, some socks, a pair of socks, a stress ball, a vaginal wipe, and an instruction sheet for your doctor. That's for $49. I gotta say, I don't know why this exists. I can't, both as a physician and as a patient who receives these exams on a regular basis, I don't know why you would need to bring your own speculum. They claim that it is a more comfortable speculum. They cite the fact that it's plastic and one-time use. Okay, I have only ever used plastic single-use speculums in my practice. Do metal ones still exist? Yeah, they're still there. And some clinicians may use those. They're certainly still out there. I don't really like them. They've got a little dial. You've got to wind to open them up. The plastic ones are way easier. They click to let you know that they're opening, which maybe the sound isn't pleasant, but I like the plastic ones. That's all I've ever used. So we're using plastic ones, a lot of us anyway. They cite that it's thinner. Well, so we have different sizes. We actually assess the patient to see what size we are going to use, depending on your age and your body type and size and whether or not maybe you've had children. Like, there are a lot of factors that go into what speculum we use. And a narrow speculum is not right for everyone's body shape and size. So it might not work for you. It might be the wrong shape for you. That's not always a plus. It really depends on your specific situation. And that's why I have a variety in the office that I can choose from so that I use the right examination tool. I have no idea why you would need this. I would never bring one with me. I ask a lot of people who have vaginas this question: would you want to bring your own speculum in a little box with you to your doctor? And they all said absolutely not.
And to be fair, I feel because I'm a cisgender dude over here who's never experienced this. My suspicion is that if cisgender dudes needed specula, there would probably be a wide assortment of, I mean, just judging from what I've seen in vape pens, there would be a wide assortment of specula in,
like,
in
all colors. Power speculums.
Yeah, this one really gets through. I don't know. But I just want to say, I am certain this is an absolutely uncomfortable experience for a lot of people, maybe like traumatic for some folks I know. And we can absolutely validate that need for comfort and that like uncomfortableness without validating someone's desire to profit off of that. And that's what sucks to me about this. This feels like somebody saying, oh, you're afraid? Give us $49.
That's exactly what this is. Because what they reference is that these are for the 90% of, first of all, they say women, which I have a
great
problem
job.
With.
Great job, people selling.
Yes, because not everyone who has a vagina and needs an exam is a woman. So for the 90% of women who get anxious about OB-GYN exams, for women who've had pain or bled, for your daughter who's scared, for the 1 in 4 women who've had sexual trauma, for gynecologic cancer survivors, for women in menopause. Okay, so they're saying, like, this is, if you're anxious, this is better. No, there, could we do episode after episode on the inadequacies in care directed at people with vaginas and cervixes and who need this sort of examination? Absolutely. And are there insensitive providers? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We've all met them. I know them. I hope I've never been them. I don't think I am. I think I'm sensitive. But all of that can be addressed without paying this company $49 for a speculum that may or may not be the right thing for you. And also just, I mean, for fancy socks and a stress ball. And we have vaginal, we have wipes. We have those in the office. We offer them, or they should. And if you're not getting that experience from your provider, absolutely, you need to advocate for yourself, complain, find a different provider. But you do, it will not be fixed with $49. And please don't hand your clinician an instruction sheet on how to do a pelvic exam.
Yeah, it wouldn't be great for the doctor-patient relationship.
No, you don't need this company in between you and a provider. You and the provider need to be able to have this conversation. And providers, we need to hear this conversation and be open to it. And you do not need to pay this company $49 to do it.
Hi, Sydney and Justin. This is the last question. Last question, Sid. Hi, Sydney and Justin. I have a weird medical question for the next time you do a questions episode. I probably didn't need to read that part. It's self-evident, huh?
Yeah.
Why do I get cold when I stay up too late? Sometimes if I have a really late night, I will get chilled even if the room I am is fine temperature and didn't change at all. Thanks so much for the show, Jess. I am so stoked to see this question because this happened to me this week because we are dying trying to make the magical candy guy, Willy Wonka, go on the stage and do all of his magical tricks, and it's taking our blood and our soul to make it happen.
Also, we're in Margaritaville.
Simultaneously, yes. Which I tried to convince the girls yesterday is called Marineraville. I couldn't get them on board. Anyway, I was so exhausted, but the cat started crying for her smooth bird. She had to have her smalls. So I forgot. We forgot to feed her. And I got up, and I thought I was getting, like, the flu because I was so tired, and I was, like, chilling. Like, my body was shaking because I just wanted to be in bed asleep.
So I love when we get questions like this because, Justin, I also have experienced this.
Good.
And I don't think I'd never thought about it as, like, it's something other people were experiencing.
Yeah.
And it is.
This is like that. That is the connection that was just made for me.
Dying. So it's not about time of day, as you may guess. It's not like after 2 a.m. you get cold. It's not time. It's the sleep deprivation. So what you're feeling is a lack of needed rest.
Yeah.
And sleep helps our brain in thermoregulation. So your body regulates its temperature, right?
Right.
We are not like lizards where we are just whatever the temperature around us is our body temperature.
Right.
Our body internally regulates.
Yeah.
We're supposed to be external, around.
Externally for some of us.
What do you mean?
With the balls.
I meant your brain. Honey.
Yeah, but like
your brain regulates your temperature.
Yeah, but the balls shrink up and that helps regulate your temperature.
No, okay.
The body's
but
doing it.
You understand
magic
like the control center of your body is making all that happen.
Well,
like your balls aren't doing
listen,
it on
Sid,
their
listen,
own.
Sid, I gotta accept where the control center is. You know, maybe
okay.
But I'm
okay.
Waka waka.
I can't with this. Your brain regulates your internal temperature. It's around 98-ish degrees. There's a lot of discrepancy about exactly what a normal body temperature is.
I've been clocking
these days.
In a lot of 97s
okay.
this week. I don't know.
It may actually be around 97 degrees, and we've been wrong for a long time. But you get the idea. It's around there, and
yeah.
That's where we're supposed to stay. And the only reason it goes up is because we have a fever or an infection or something else. Or, you know, it's a bad situation. You're overheated. Or it goes way down. That's bad, too.
Right.
Anyway, it needs to stay in that range. In order to do that, your brain has to be well rested. It has to have, there's a lot of things that go into thermoregulation. There are other factors, there are other disorders that can change it. But sleep is part of maintaining thermoregulation. When you stop sleeping for long periods of time, your brain starts to lose the ability to regulate your temperature well. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to, like, heat up to 108 or something. It doesn't mean that your body temperature is going to drop to the 80s. And I mean, you're not going to die. Eventually, with enough sleep deprivation, you will die. But in that short period where you're starting to experience sleep deprivation, one of the things the brain lets go of is that constant
regulation.
Yes.
It's like a system to jettison. Like, okay,
yeah.
We're not doing that anymore.
And just a little.
Yeah.
Again, just a little to make you feel cold. Not enough to make you freeze to death, but a little to make you feel kind of cold. That's what's happening. And so the fix for it is sleep. But it's that simple.
But do you see what the body's doing, though? That's genius. Body's like, hey, you should get under a blanket.
You should go get under a blanket.
You should get under a blanket.
Wouldn't it feel good to lay down under a blanket right now?
Lay down under a blanket.
There are lots of ways.
You're so cold.
Yes, there are lots of triggers in our brain to tell us go to sleep. But that is that. Well, I mean, that's, you know. That's why we have adapted to circadian rhythms. That's why when it gets dark, our brain releases melatonin and says, go to sleep now. Do you see the sleep? We have evolutionarily that is advantageous to us because when we respond to those triggers and we go to sleep, our brain can do everything it needs to do, like regulate our temperature.
Hey, folks, thank you so much for listening to this podcast that we call Sawbones. Well, everybody calls it that because it's called that. Thanks to the taxpayers for use of their song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program. Sorry again about last week, y'all. It's been a real, just like full disclosure, it's been a lot of work. It'll be better, but it's been a really tough couple weeks. And thanks for hanging in there with us. We appreciate you. And come see our show, by the way.
There are going to be some great shows this summer.
June 14th through the 16th, June 21st through the 23rd, you can come see
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. That's the version of,
yeah.
There's so many versions.
Dad is playing Grandpa Joe. And then there's a weekend dark, and then the 2 weekends after that, come see Sydney and I escape to Margaritaville. It's going to be a party. After we've opened up our veins and let our blood spill into the gutters of the theater and make the magic for the audiences, mm-hmm. then it will be a party.
Yeah, and our kids are in the pre-show for Wonka. They're adorable.
They're adorable. It's great. Come on out. Very reasonably priced. Bring a picnic basket. Make it an evening out of it.
It is in Huntington, West Virginia.
You do need to know it's in Huntington, West Virginia. That's going to do it for us this week. Until next time, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.